Welcome to the Adult Child of Dysfunction podcast, where we untangle the past, rewrite the present, and reclaim our future. I am your host, Tammy Vincent, and together we will break free from old patterns, heal wounds, and create new narratives. Are you ready to transform the effects of your dysfunctional past into your superpowers? Are you excited to get back in touch with your true, authentic self? If so, then hit subscribe and join me weekly on the Adult Child of Dysfunction podcast. Here we will learn from experts as well as experienced thrivers how to turn our trials into smiles while living our most authentic and joyful lives. Well, hello, everybody, and welcome back to another episode of Adult Child of Dysfunction. Today, our special guest is Jane Epstein, and I'm super excited to talk to her today. She's a survivor of and an advocate for survivors of sibling sexual abuse and trauma. She is co-founder of both incestaware.org and fivewaves.org, an international 501(c)(3) advocacy group that offers information, support, and guidance about sibling sexual abuse and trauma. She is one of 12 moderators of a survivor Facebook group with 7,000 members, and her TEDx talk entitled Giving Voice to Sibling Sexual Abuse has already reached over 600,000 people. Her stories have been featured in People magazine, and I'm going to go on and on and on. She's got so much to tell. And she's right now she's working on a, I'm going to let her tell you about her memoir, but she's also working on a children's book about sibling sexual trauma and body safety. And now she's just here to share her story, answer some questions that people I know have, and just talk about a topic which not a lot of people like to talk about, but it's out there, so it should definitely be talked about. So welcome, Jane.
Thank you, Tammy. Thank you so much for having me today. I really appreciate it.
Yeah. So, I mean, obviously your story came from somewhere. So I will let you give us the shortened version. And then I do have some questions, actually, that a few of my clients and people just that I know have reached out and asked. So I'm going to just ask them.
Okay, great. I do have the Reader's Digest version of my story. I can kind of condense it. The short version, because we're condensing 40, 50 years into 2 minutes. The short version is I was fighting depression and I was in marriage counseling for 5 years. I was on antidepressants. I had given up alcohol and yet nothing was working. I still had this incredible sadness in my heart. And so one day I thought, maybe it's something inside of me. I mean, I tried to fix my husband. I tried to fix my life and nothing was working. So I thought maybe it's something inside of me. Maybe it's that little nagging voice. Mm-hmm. It was there that I decided to start writing my story, started writing it down. And something kind of interesting happened. I realized, wait a second, my life happened out of order. I was sexually abused as a child. Maybe that was a bigger deal than I thought, because I'd always brushed it off as, oh, it was just kids being curious. I was complicit in the abuse. That didn't mess me up. That's not it. It's just my husband. It's losing my late husband. It's something else that messed me up. But when I wrote it down, I thought, I think that needs to be examined. So once I started examining it and I started Googling sibling sexual abuse and trauma, this was 7 years ago. Google was almost silent. And I thought, I can't be the only person that experienced this. And so I started drilling down a little deeper, and turns out it is a silent epidemic. Thank goodness today, if you Google sibling sexual abuse and trauma, there's more out there. Because even since I gave my TEDx, more research has been conducted, more survivors are coming forward. And I rarely hear from survivors anymore that say, I've never seen anyone talking about this. So now more survivors are coming forward, which is great, because I hate people suffering in silence like I was. So that's kind of how I came to be. I wrote my story down. I started getting really loud. The media was ignoring me. The media shook. They're getting a little better. And that's how I ended up on the TEDx stage. And I thought, I'm going to bring my story to the TEDx stage, and that way you can't ignore me. And that's opened doors to Five Waves. It's opened doors to more media. It's opened doors to finding other survivors and healing. So that's kind of the short version.
It's pretty explicit. It goes right to the point. I mean, you told us the highlights, and, you know, and 600,000 people on a TEDx talk. That's a lot of people hearing a message that needs to be heard. That's for sure. And I was the same way when people came, you know, even some of my clients that were like, well, this went on with me. And it's very easy, you know, me who works with people and helps people to see how it can happen. But to the outside world, It's not you. They just every, it's like with alcoholism or addiction or anything else, there's this stigma and this preconceived notion of what happened and ooh. And, I was talking to my mother-in-law and I was telling her about this interview today. And the first thing she says is, "Did you ever read those books, Flowers in the Attic?"
Yeah.
And that was my, I mean, I read that book at 10 or 11 years old, that series. And
Yeah.
so it's not like it's never happened before. So, and it was, it's something that so many people have questions about and nobody wants to talk about. So what was your big aha moment? Did you have an aha moment where you realized, oh, this is it. This is why I'm feeling the way I'm feeling.
Great question. I don't know. I think the aha moment was when I told my marriage counselor, and because we had tried everything, we had turned over every stone, and I said, "Well, there's this," and because I'd actually brought it up in counseling prior to another counselor, and she said, "But you've dealt with that, right?" And I was like, "Yeah, I've dealt with that," because my older sibling had actually apologized to me when I was 21, so it couldn't have been that big of a deal. And I felt complicit in the abuse. So when I told the marriage counselor, I was kind of grasping at straws. I was like, well, there's this. Because he said, your anger and depression do not match the circumstances. And I said, well, there's this little thing. And he said, that's kind of a big deal. And I'm like, but I was just a kid. And he said, yes. And I said, but aren't kids curious? And he said, yes, but not for 6 years. And I said, but can't be that big a deal. And he said, no, it's a big deal. And I think that's when I had to really look at it and understand that no, it did change my views on sex. It changed my views on my self-esteem. It changed a lot of things, but he had apologized. So I thought, how can I still be mad at him? But I still had to process all the anger and all the depression. I still had to do all of that work.
Absolutely. And you said he confronted you, like he apologized when you were 21.
Right. And my response was, it's okay, I participated. But I took his apology and I shoved it back in the little box that it was in. And I thought, no, I'm not opening that box. I refused to open that box. But guess what? Box demanded to be opened. And I had to understand that while I thought I was complicit, I was only a 6-year-old little girl and my body responded to his touch. My body didn't know who was touching me. And then my body craved sexual attention at a young age, and I became hypersexual.
Right. Yeah, because your body, I mean, it's stimulation regardless. It doesn't matter who, it doesn't matter what. And then you grow up with the guilt, like you said, of the guilt of, wow, well, it was technically consensual, quote unquote, because I enjoyed it, or I didn't fight it off, or I didn't say no. And so
And that's
how do you,
shame.
yeah, it's absolutely, absolutely. And that's a big thing. So how would you know, like, had you not confronted it or had it never been talked about, what would have been different?
I'm sorry, I'm not sure I
Okay,
understand your
so,
question.
like, if you had not, you and your brother had never actually, it was your brother, I'm assuming, right? Yes. Okay. Had you never spoken about it, had it never been confronted, would it have just continued to be the same? Or, like, what is your relationship with him? I guess that is what I'm asking. Like, was, yeah, I don't know really
Say it
exactly.
again. Yeah, I see where you're going. I think by him apologizing, I had that in my back pocket. So in my brain, I knew, okay, on some level, he knows that this happened. He acknowledged that it happened. I'm not imagining it. Had he not apologized, I think I would have carried a lot more anger and a lot more depression.
Okay.
And would I have confronted him? Would I have ever had the courage to confront him? I don't know.
Yeah. But so he confronted you. He came and apologized without you initiating it.
Yes. Which is rare, and I don't take that for granted, and that's why I do speak out because I have his permission to speak out. He knows that it's a silent epidemic. He knows he's not the only person out there that did this. So I feel like it's my
So let me ask,
responsibility to speak.
I'm just curious. So in, I mean, this happens in all types of households. So it doesn't have to be, I mean, I deal with a lot of people that went through very traumatic, households in general, and the relationships get started because there's just this need for just closeness and attention. They're not getting it from their parents, they're not getting it from anybody. So it becomes kind of like the book Thorns in the Attic or Petals in the Attic and Thorns in the, I don't remember the whole series, the V.C.
Yes.
Andrews series, where they are all each other has. But was that your situation, or were you in, a normal, healthy family?
Well, first of all, your podcast is called Adult Child of Dysfunction, I believe.
Right.
And my family, my first question is, what family isn't dysfunctional?
Right.
But my situation, I think that I was vulnerable because my parents were living a separate life. They were mentally separated. My sibling who sexually abused me, I believe is neurodivergent, and I believe my father is neurodivergent. I don't know if they've never been diagnosed. My father wasn't sure what to do with a little girl. So
Okay.
I was already vulnerable. There were dysfunctions in my family. And yes, children who witness violence and alcoholism, they grow together, they have each other, and they have that closeness, and sibling sexual abuse and trauma can happen in those environments. I will say that we're very careful because a lot of the researchers are using family dysfunction as an indicator that this could happen. However, I'm fighting back on that a little bit. We don't have the studies, we don't have the research because we need more studies, we need more people to come forward, we need more stories. But with children having access to pornography, not if they come across it, but when they come across it, it's skyrocketed. And I hate to say it, but brothers are raping their sisters. And it may not be a quote unquote dysfunctional family according to the researchers'
Right.
terms. So that's something it's a marathon, not a sprint. And we're trying to slowly get more stories out there and get the family dysfunction out of it. Because if you're a parent, you think, oh, well, my family's perfect or near perfect, so it's not going to happen in my family. It absolutely could happen in your family.
And I think that's the point I was trying to make, is that it's not just things have to be horrific at home, and that's the only thing that draws them together. Like, so for me, when I hear about it, I think to myself, oh, I can see how easily that could happen. Like, to me, it's not a shocker. It's not a, oh, because I didn't have the support anywhere else. So I can see that side of it. But people out there listening, it's not the only way it happens. And you're right with the pornography and everything. So a younger sibling is really just its availability.
Yes. And I got in trouble from a survivor by stating that it is a crime of opportunity. I'm not saying because you're available and you're there that you deserve to get sexually abused, but when children view pornography, they have questions. And if they don't have an open door policy, if they don't tell their parents that they viewed pornography, they might act out on those sexual feelings on a younger sibling or a younger cousin. We want to prevent it from happening because it's got so many layers and it literally destroys families, it destroys grandparents' lives, it destroys friendships. It literally can implode your world.
Oh, absolutely. And it's blown away. Like, to me, it's just one of those things. I did another podcast episode, and it was on adoption trauma. And again, it's one of those things. If you've never experienced it, you're oblivious to it. You're ignorant to it, I guess you could say, in a nice way. But it's definitely something where you can see how it could happen, and it's happening so much. Let me ask you, just a curious for people that are out there listening, because I do know that people are out there, and it has happened, and it goes beyond the curiosity, playing doctor with your cousin and do it. It seems like that was normal when I was younger. It was like, oh yeah, we play doctor. But then at what point, but how, once you realize that this is what happened and now it's 10, 20 years later, how do you let go? Like, what are some tips maybe you could give to let go of some of that shame when you feel that guilt and that just it, because it definitely carries into your adulthood, without a doubt.
I do have a lot of survivors who reach out to me and say, was this abuse or was it curiosity? And even the expert can't seem to agree what's abuse, what's curiosity, what's harmful sexual behavior, what's traumatic. And the co-founders of Five Waves, we defer to the survivor. How does the survivor experience it? And you are experiencing it 10 years later. You're looking back on it and you're thinking, oh, that was kind of a big deal. But you're looking at it with your adult brain. And then
Right.
I hear from survivors who say, I can't believe I let that happen, or there's so much shame. But I often tell people what kind of worked for me was I actually pulled out a picture of me age 6, and I looked at that little girl, and I still talk about her in the third person, but I had to reconnect with her and give her grace and understand that she was sick, that I'm looking at it now from an adult perspective.
And
As far as letting go, I firmly believe if you carry that story in your body by yourself, that that adds to it. And so I'm a big believer in finding your peer support. There's a survivor group and Facebook group. I don't moderate it, but I'm a member. I believe in finding people that can hear your story, that can share your story, and that can support you, and you get it out of you and you get it out of your body. I really believe that.
100%. And I agree too with the going back and viewing and giving grace to that little 6-year-old, because I feel like, I mean, I did 6 years of inner child work, and it's so important because that's where all of these beliefs and the shame and this guilt and this feeling unworthy and unlovable and dirty, and that's where it all comes from, is when all this stuff is happening when you're little. And you have to. Do you suggest, now this is just, I know this is a pretty bold question, but do you suggest if people are in this situation that they do confront a sibling if they're in their adulthood and they know it's something that has never been dealt with?
That's really a personal decision. And what I'm going to strongly suggest is that if that's happening, you can reach out to me, or you can go into fivewaves.org. There's a Facebook group. Come in and share your story and talk to others who've gone through that and see what they've experienced. There are ramifications, of course. And
Yes.
I can't promise you that, oh, your parents are going to run to you and say, oh, we're so sorry that happened to you. The other child's a monster. I'm saying, because it could be a brother, it could be a sister, it could be a cousin. It's not always a brother. It's most of the time it's brother, but it could be a sister.
Right.
We can't guarantee that the parents are going to say, oh, we believe you. Your brother or sister is a monster. Let's kick them out. We won't support them. Unfortunately, that rarely happens because parents are blindsided and they honestly don't know what to do. And sometimes they just freeze and they want it to go away. And a lot of times survivors will confront the person and the person denies it because they're afraid they're going to go to jail. So every situation is different, but I have seen survivors confront their person that abused them and they might lose family, they might lose friends, but they feel better. They get their justice. So I strongly suggest coming into a group, kind of seeing what other people's experiences are and know you have those gut instincts. And it may not happen overnight, but you will know what to do when you need it. And I support survivors who take their abusers to jail. I support those who forgive them, whatever that survivor needs. Only you know what you need. It's your own journey. And I'm never to tell another survivor what they should or should not do.
No, I spoke to someone and she said that she didn't say anything for years and years and years. And then when it came time and there was other children, other little girls involved, a niece or her own daughter, then it was literally like, okay, it's not about me anymore. It's about them. And I think that took, that was giving herself a little grace too, because she's like, well, I'm not going to blame it on me. I'm protecting them. But she said it was the best thing she ever did, and it was hard. But she said she was doing it at that point for a reason, kind of like you're an advocate for a reason. Now you're telling your story. It's not always fun to get up and tell that story over and over and over again, but every time you tell it, you're helping someone because absolutely, you're making someone aware, you're making someone question it, you're making someone have the courage to tell it, really. Is that, so let me, another question, and this is curiosity again. I'm just really curious about this. How do you know, like you said, okay, at first you thought I'm over it, or I dealt with that. It wasn't a big deal. He said he's sorry. It's good. What are some questions you can ask yourself if you're really not sure if you are?
I kind of healed. I'm still healing, by the way. I kind of healed by accident. And the way I figured out that I wasn't over it was it was impacting my daily life. It's impacting intimacy with my husband. It's impacting my relationships with my children because I'm angry, I'm volatile, I'm depressed. That's how I knew that no, I was not over it. And I'm still not over it because I still struggle with intimacy and I still struggle with a lot of jumpiness. And there's anger. I still go from 0 to 60. I'm reactionary. I'm impulsive. Everything seems like a rush. Everything seems to happen right. It needs to happen right away. So I still have my trauma responses. They're deeply ingrained, but I'm aware of them.
Yeah. And you're doing it, you know what? It's one step forward, one day at a time. Like, just keep going forward. Every day gets
Every
better.
day.
Yep, every day it gets better. And honestly, really, with just the awareness, I always say this too, and people have heard me say this a thousand times. With the awareness, now you can make better choices because you are aware of why you are. So the impulsiveness, at least you can understand why, and then you can slow yourself down or try to and make better choices or different choices, or at least, know where it's coming from versus this just something's not right and I don't know what it is. So I can.
And I can apologize to my husband when I say, I'm really sorry, because I don't transition well. I realize that. I'm not sure that's a trauma response, but now at least I know I can apologize.
Right. Well, I think that's hard in general. It's really hard. And another question is I had, and I have all these questions. I'm sorry. I'm kind of all over the place, but
Why we're
I,
here.
yeah, absolutely. How do you, okay, so even if you understand, like in your head, logically, I mean, we know we have our subconscious mind that's spilling us all this stuff. And then we have our logical mind, which is saying, I know it wasn't my fault. I know I did nothing. How do you suggest to people that they, even though their logical brain understands that they still feel carry that shame? Is there a way to start to walk forward from that?
Think one step forward, two steps back. I still carry shame, but I also believe, again, in finding others and seeing your story in their story, or sharing your story and helping someone else when they see themselves in your story. When you help someone else, when you help even one person, that helps you heal. Honestly, I still had so much shame until my husband knew my story. He didn't know my story. We got married, he didn't know my story. He finally got to understand a lot of the reasons why I was the way I was. He still loved me. Now, I still battle that because I still feel like I'm not worthy of his love. I'm a lot of work for you. I'm so sorry. But honestly, being heard by my peers and supported by my peers, that's when a lot of my shame has washed away. Now, my memoir is getting ready to come out and I'm terrified. So I still carry shame.
So tell us about your memoir. I mean, I'm excited about that. When's it coming out? What's the name of it? I didn't mention any of that because I wanted you to talk about it.
It's the title is called I Feel Real Guilty. It is coming out September of 2024. It took me 7 years to get down on paper. And when I started writing it to raise awareness. I was really trying to raise awareness. I was screaming. I was like screaming at people, you've got to talk about this, you've got to talk about this. By the time I've gotten to the end of it and I had my TEDx, I realized no, writing the book was for me.
Yeah.
It was my healing journey. And I even tried to hire a ghostwriter. I wanted someone else to write it. And they said, you should really write it. I'm like, I don't want to write this. And it took forever, but it turns out it was for me. It was a gift to myself to write it down and get it out.
And I haven't obviously read it. It's not out yet, but you can't, nobody else, no ghostwriter can get in your head. No ghostwriter can get in your
No.
heart like that. There's
No.
no, I mean, a ghostwriter can write a book about how for you on how to write a computer program, not how to
Yeah.
reprogram this up here,
Yeah.
and how to do
I had to
that.
learn that.
So did your parents know or ever find out? Oh, well, obviously they found out now, but did they know or suspect?
They didn't know, they didn't suspect. My father passed away before I had confronted, before the memories came roaring back and demanded attention. So he passed away not knowing. My mom, I told her later in life, in my late 20s, and she cried and she said, I'm sorry. And she said, I believe you. And how did this happen? Where was I? And she went through the whole process of, okay, now you've got to forgive him because I was angry at him. I pushed him away. I pushed his family away. She kept saying, you got to forgive. You got to forgive. And I was saying, I don't have to do anything. But then I did forgive him and I let her know I'd forgiven him. And then she realized, oh, now she had her own journey to go on to forgive herself. So she knows that I'm very public. She wasn't crazy about it at first, but she knows that in my heart, I know that this is what I'm supposed to do, that I was called to do this. And she sees that now. Now she sees that, okay, no, this is what you were supposed to do. But my other sibling and the sibling who abused me, it's not like they're standing up there going, yeah, you go, girl. they're in denial and they want to hide their heads, and I want to protect them. I'm protective of my whole family. But yeah, it's my mom's had her own journey, and my dad, I think he would be shocked because they did try and do the right things as parents. They did try to raise us knowing right from wrong. And my sibling, honestly, I asked him, I said, why did you do this? Thinking he'd been abused. And he said, I was curious and my body responded and I wanted more. And he said, I didn't understand I was hurting you until many, many years later.
So if he didn't even understand and he was doing it, how are you supposed to, you know what I mean? It's like,
Yeah.
yeah.
He knew it was wrong. He knew it
He,
was
yeah,
wrong, but he
he,
just didn't know he was causing harm and
the
changing my life
magnitude
to
of
protect
what it
her.
was going, yeah, the magnitude of what it was going to do to you in the long run and
Right.
everything. So do you have, I mean, you're an advocate, so you have a lot of research and stuff like that. Do you have any kind of statistics? Like how often this happens, you know, I mean, I'm just curious.
Yeah, there are studies out there. Again, we need more survivor stories. We need more parent stories, and we need more people who have caused harm to come forward with their stories. And actually, you can share your story anonymously on siblings2.com. I don't work with Nancy, but she's trustworthy. If you wanted to share, if you're a person who caused harm, you can share your story with siblings2.com. So we need more research. There's a lot of shame. It goes on a lot more than we know. So when they are doing the research studies, they're working from very, very limited numbers. And the numbers right now suggest that it's, the five waves, they always have a different number. I always state the one that I remember and that everybody's been citing. A lot of researchers are citing it's 3 to 5 times more common than father-daughter incest. But again, that's working from a tiny pool. We think I believe that's an accurate number. I think it's the not enough people that I hear from daily keep happening a lot.
Well, it's like they say, you know, one in five children have an addicted parent. But my mother was literally, both of my parents were alcoholics my entire life, but it never went on record until my mom died of cirrhosis of the liver. So
Okay.
it's like, you know, so right there, that's, and so many people, they never know. It's not something that people come out and go, okay, you know, when you're doing the censorship, when you fill that out every, what, 5 years, you don't put, yes, I'm an alcoholic, or yes, I abused my dog, you know, my sister. You don't do those things.
Not
So there's,
usually.
so yeah, so I can only imagine if it's saying that number, it's the numbers way more because, like you said, you're such a limited pool, such a limited pool. And you're getting to the people that you're advocating for and the big groups you're talking to. But there's how many people that don't listen to the radio, don't listen to iPhone, you know, don't have an iPhone, don't do this, are in these smaller villages and whatever it is, it's got to be insane, an insane number.
It's a lot of people, and a lot of young people find me on TikTok, and the stories are heartbreaking.
Yeah. And so you have two organizations, the Incest Aware and Five Waves. Are they similar in?
Incest Aware is more inclusive of all types of abuse, father,
Okay.
daughter, grandfather, daughter. And fivewaves.org is sibling sexual trauma and abuse specific.
Okay.
It's formed by three parents who discovered it in their home and two survivors. So we have the unique stories of those both sides.
Interesting. And there's support so they can reach out to either of these organizations. You can seek support. You probably have a ton, like you said before when we were talking originally, you have tons of resources and just you can get people to the right place. Because
Yes.
it's, oh, if nothing else, you need a support group. You need somebody to open up to.
Yeah,
That's,
I believe that. I do.
yeah.
And
And we,
honestly, the support groups were more, I did talk therapy for 5 years, but finding the support groups and being able to raise my hand and say, I go through this, I feel this, and having someone say, me too, that the support groups was where I really began to heal.
yep. And it makes total sense. Even with my clients, I have a, we meet, you know, once a week or once a month, even sometimes. And it's like an Al-Anon meeting. You, even if you sit there and you never say a word, you know, you're in, on the phone or in a meeting with 30 other people that know exactly where you're coming from. And
Yeah.
that's huge. That's
Yeah.
huge. So I definitely suggest that for anybody that's listening to, that's just kind of doesn't know where to start or doesn't know who to talk to. I mean, there's that group. I mean, I'm going to put that link to your Facebook group, which is.
It's run by Empowered Survivors. I'll get you the link because I don't moderate it, but I'm a member, and
Okay.
you can even post anonymously within that group. I don't even know the name of it. Survivors of Sibling Sexual Abuse by Empowered
Okay.
Survivors. I will get that to you. Yeah, it's a tight-knit, supportive community. Yeah,
And
when I
that's
first joined, there were 60 people, and that was maybe 2 years ago, and now we have over 800.
wow. That's a big jump.
Yeah.
That's a big jump. And that's, again, like you said, it's a small niche, but it's a huge niche. It's the same, you look at all these things, and that's why this podcast, it's like, because yours is a different perspective, and it doesn't, who knows who's listening to this? Like I said, it's adult child dysfunction. I did that for a reason, because it was so, my story is alcoholism and addiction. That is not everybody's story, but everybody has some kind of dysfunction. So everybody, it's just different perspectives on universal problems. I mean, really is what it is. I just really, I appreciate you answering questions, because a lot of people have questions and they don't, and they need to hear it from somebody with lived experience. I can read all the books in the world, and I can talk to all the people in the world, but unless you talk to someone or talk from someone that's been there and walked the shoe in the shoes, you don't understand. They don't understand. I remember my first coaching client. She said, it was just, we were kind of joking, and she had been to therapy for, like, I don't know, 11 years. And she goes, "My gosh, in 18 minutes, you figured out more about why I am the way I am than she did in 11 years." And I'm like, "Well, that was 50 grand you wasted, but I've been there. I did that, done this. It's super easy when you've been there, So what are some of your tips and tricks and like healing tools that you use? What do you use to keep yourself grounded, and when things start surfacing?
I journal. And
Love
I
it.
but I set a timer because it can be triggering, and it can be it can be ta it can take you back to that moment that you are not in that moment anymore. So I do strongly suggest that if you journal, that you also have support. But I journal. I get it out of my body. I get it out of my head, because that's kind of how my story came out. It was bubbling to the surface, and I felt like someone inside of me was going to die if I didn't get it out. And it was that 6-year-old little girl stomping her feet, saying, "I need to be heard. I need to be acknowledged." I was just slowly dying inside. So I journal, and I've mentioned this several times within this podcast because I really believe it. Find your peers. We have a support group for parents. We have a support group for survivors. Don't have a whole lot of resources for those who've caused harm or trying to gather those resources, but I don't have a support group. Those are my two biggest things, because if you find a support group, you will slowly let your story out, and it won't be inside of you, and you won't be carrying it alone. You don't need to carry it alone. You are not the only person in the world who experienced this. This is not yours to carry alone.
No.
We will gladly support you.
And I think that's important to know, because so many people, I used to teach first grade, and I knew how I grew up. I knew why I slept on the desk. I knew all this stuff. But when I was teaching first grade, I can remember looking around thinking, wow, six of these 24 kids are exactly where I was, and nobody knows it about each other. They all think they're the
Right.
only one,
They all think they're the only ones. As humans, that's how we think, and we aren't alone. We aren't.
Our problems aren't important because we're the only ones going through them, so nobody cares about this. And that, you're right, that silence will kill you. My favorite book in the whole world is The Body Keeps Score. And I read it, and I quote from it, and I use it, and because that's literally sickness and inflammation, and all of that is nothing. I always, it's literally just pent up emotions. That's all it is. And it does so much damage, so much damage.
So
And
much.
I'm a huge fan of journaling. And I always tell people too, I write, if you don't know how to get started journaling, it can be difficult. It can be kind of like, where do you start? But now there's so many resources on Google or whatever. And I just started writing letters. I started writing letters to myself. And then one of the most healing things was writing letters back. So I might be writing a sorry letter, or a I'm here for you, 6-year-old letter. But then when you wrote, I would write back to myself
That's
from.
brilliant.
And that is when the floodgates opened. And I did it with my opposite hand, like they teach in inner child work, to grab from the other side of your brain. And you don't
Wow.
even like it. Wow. It was
I
like
haven't done that, and I'm going to try that
mind
one.
blowing.
I'll never be able to read it.
Yeah, I know. Mine was really sloppy for a while. But you just it literally opened up a whole nother set of the side of your brain that you didn't was locked in there, literally locked in there.
Okay, I'm
So
going to
that
try that next.
yeah, it's really interesting. And like you said though, do it with some support. Be ready, and a timer is a great idea because you don't want to get yourself into a situation where you're very triggered. And with that, I mean, I also teach like breathing exercises and stuff just to keep that down. But you always want to have somebody to call, especially when you try to do things like that on your own. That can be very, can be powerful, to say the least.
Yeah, but it definitely takes you back in that moment, but you aren't in that moment. So, yeah, definitely have some support.
Yep, absolutely. I love it. So yeah, that's your trick you learned. So I tell people that all the time, and I'm like, yeah, because I didn't know how to journal, and there wasn't the internet. There wasn't. So I have journals of day one. This is what I did today. But then when I really wanted to really get down in it, I was like, how do I? And I didn't know where to start. So I just letters to myself or whoever it could be. It could be if I was mad at my mom, it might have been a letter to my mom that day, and then it was her writing back to me. And then if I was, when I went through inner child work, it was letter to that 6-year-old, and it was her writing back to me or my brother or whatever it was. But so do you have a relate? You said you're not real close with your brothers now. They're not like happy, but he knows it's something you need to do.
He knows it's something I need to do. The sibling who caused abuse. The other sibling has asked me, should I read your memoir? And I said, you don't have to. You do not need to read the memoir. The relationship with the sibling who caused abuse or caused harm, it harm abuse. It's strained. It's awkward. I probably haven't seen him in person probably 10 years. I feel like if I were to call him, I could ask him things, and I have asked him things. But it's just strange. It won't be Thanksgiving dinner together kind of relationship. It just doesn't go back the way that it was.
You can't undo things. You can move past them, but you can't undo them. For other listeners too, I do have a question. This is coming from kind of me. How do you know, like in a situation like that, like how do you know, like if you should trust like this person with your own children? Is that an individual, just gut instinct kind of thing?
So there's been studies, and they say 95% of children who abuse do not go on to abuse. However, the abuse does, I believe it changes person to abuse. I think it changes their brain. I think it changes their sexuality. And there are stories from survivors who say, no, I walked in on him. It's usually him. I'm sorry. Possibly abusing their own children. So we need more research. My children, because I'm hypervigilant, they were never alone with him. I never had to be in a situation where I had to tell his wife. She kind of found out that again, it's all those aspects of you're growing up, and then you see their children, and you freak out and you worry about their children, and you don't know, and you think, should I tell his wife? And if I tell his wife and she hates me, and it's messy.
I see.
Again, every situation is different. Trust those instincts. I know that my sibling did not go on to harm his children, but that's my story. That's my situation.
And that's really, I mean, we have instincts for a reason.
You
Use
gotta
them.
listen to them.
You got to listen to your instincts. It's kind of like if I can walk by the same thing on the road at work on the floor 10 times, but that one time I'm like, ooh, I better pick that up. Someone's going to get hurt. I listen to those instincts. There's a reason we have them, So I always tell people, even with anything, if it doesn't feel right, it probably isn't.
Yeah, but we don't always know why, but we don't have to know why. We just need to listen.
We need to listen. Well, this has been super fun. Well, I guess it's fun, you could say, but I mean, an interesting conversation and much needed information because a lot of people are out there, and I know for a fact I could name on, I mean, beyond my 10 fingers, people that have gone through it that have never confronted it or never really dealt with it. And like you said, it seeps into everything. Anything that you're going through in your body seeps that you've never dealt with seeps into every aspect of your life.
Yeah.
So thank you so much for coming. If people want to reach out, or ask you questions or get you to point them in the right direction, what is the best place for them to do that?
You can email me at info@fivewaves.org,
Okay.
or you can email me at my website, which is jane-epstein.com. There is another Jane Epstein, but I'm the jane-epstein.com. I'm also very active on Instagram. You can message me
Okay.
on Instagram, and there I'm jane_complicatedcourage. I'm
Okay, and I'll
transitioning
put
from
all that in the
complicated
show
courage
notes.
to Jane. Yeah.
Yep, I'll put
So
that on.
yeah, you can reach out to, and if you're a parent, definitely reach out to info@fiveways.org, and one of the parents will respond to your email. Yeah.
Sounds great. Sounds great. And I can't wait for your memoir to come out, honestly, just because I like you and I'm just saying, and it's a t even though it's I'm sure it's a lot of emotion in there, it's still probably your people are gonna learn from it, and they're gonna it'll touch people's lives, I'm sure, 100%.
It's a story. It's a little different because I was also a young widow, so there's the grief aspect, and yeah, I do
Oh
hope that it
wow.
reaches someone. Yeah.
Okay. Wow, yeah. I have my best friend, one a very good friend of mine, just wrote a book called The Positive Widow.
Okay,
Yeah,
I'll
you
have to
should
check that
read.
one out.
That's a really good book. Yeah,
Okay.
she just finished writing it. It was again 7 years in the making kind of thing, and
Yeah.
really interesting story. But I appreciate you coming on. Now, I do want you to leave the listeners with maybe a piece of advice or words of wisdom or some just whatever you want to leave them with.
I'm careful about not offering advice because I believe every journey is different. But what has worked for me was I owned my story and I gave myself some grace. And I also quit striving for that finish line. I kept spending so much time searching for that finish line. When I reach here, I'll be healed. When I reach here, I'll be healed. And once I decided maybe there isn't a finish line, maybe I will learn to live with this pain and own my story. That's kind of when I was able to slow down and slowly heal. I'm still healing.
We all are. I love that advice though, because it's very true. So many people are like, oh, well, as soon as I can do this, or as soon as I can do this without doing this, I'll be fine. It's a journey, it's a lifelong journey. And just
It is.
embrace where you're at. And like you said before, just keep moving one step at a time, one step forward.
Absolutely.
Well, thank you so much for coming, Jane.
Thank you, Tammy.
You're welcome. And for everybody else out there listening, if you have any questions, please reach out. Please, please, please do not suffer in silence ever. You're worth so much more than that, and you just deserve to be happy. Thank you. Thanks so much for joining me today on the Adult Child of Dysfunction podcast. If this episode resonated with you, or you think someone else could benefit from what you heard, why not share it with someone you care about? Let's heal from our past and take back control of our lives together. If you're interested in learning more, head on over to www.tammyvincent.com for a free chapter of my book, Surviving Alcoholic Parents. While you're there, be sure to catch my invigorating seminar, Awakening Your Authentic Self. Together, we will rewrite our stories and turn trials into triumphant smiles. Until next time, keep embracing your strength, keep being you, and know that you are more than enough. You are way more than enough right here, right now.